This Dharma talk by Mayor Chapman was recorded on December 8th, 2023 at the annual Women's Mindfulness Retreat at Holy Wisdom Monastery in Middleton, Wisconsin.
So here we are on the first evening of our retreat. And I hope your day of practice thus far has felt worthwhile and you've been able to be gentle and kind with yourself. The theme for this retreat this year is anger, love, and women's power. I hope you remembered that. So I want to begin my talk tonight by telling you about a dream I had on vacation this summer. In the dream, I'm at a community gathering with a lot of other people. We're listening to some speaker when suddenly, out of the blue and bursting up through my body, feels like from my roots of my being, I ferociously roar, "I am so mad!" And people around me abruptly turn around with looks of aghast on their face. And I yell this so intensely that my whole body feels charged, ignited. And so ignited that it takes me a long time to fall back to sleep. But I do eventually get back to sleep. When I wake up in the morning, and I remember the dream, I think, where is this coming from? Am I mad at someone or something? It didn't seem like I was. I was on vacation, feeling pretty mellow. But then I thought about it for a few more moments, and I thought, oh yeah, I'm actually really mad. I'm mad about all the injustice and aggression and hatred that's dominating our world. I'm mad about the extremism and the polarization and the habit of war that wrecks and murders innocent people. I'm mad that power-hungry bully men with no regard for human life and our planet dominate with such clout. I'm mad about the continued violence inflicted on women and oppressed people of all kinds. I'm mad about the ways we're destroying our planet, our precious planet. I am mad, and I feel powerless. How about you? Do you ever feel furious about how messed up things are and powerless? Good. I'm glad to hear some little, yes. So I want to unpack this. I want to explore anger. Let's get to know it more honestly and clearly. You know, what it is, its purpose, its danger, its benefit. Let's look at this from the perspective of Buddhist philosophy and mindfulness. Let's explore how we can relate to it with our heart's wisdom so we can use its powerful energy to help change things for the better, for within our own lives and beyond our own lives. The dictionary defines anger as a strong feeling of displeasure and belligerence caused by a wrong. It's a hot, fiery feeling that arises very quickly when something's happened that we judge as not right. Anger's feeling tone is very unpleasant, right? Sometimes all-consuming and really quite painful. And we feel its heat to varying degrees, from mild irritation and annoyance to resentment and impatience to aggravating frustration to full-blown explosive rage and fury. Anger gets a bad rap in most spiritual and religious traditions, as well as in societal conditioning. Namely, we get the message that we shouldn't be angry, and if we do feel it, we should keep it under control and get over it quickly. This is surely because expressed unskillfully, anger does cause so much harm. Plus, over and over, we see how unskillful we humans are with it. And of course, in our conditioning as women, to be likable, understanding, and nurturing, we get the clear message that anger is definitely not okay to feel or express. It seems it's very legit for men, but not for us. Not for us. As one woman said, it's not ladylike. It's not attractive. We're expected to set aside our feelings in order to care for others. And if we don't, we may get labeled selfish, uncaring, or cold. And we all know the nasty labels that can be laid on women when they express they're mad. So we learn to ignore the disrespect, the negation, the abuse, the discrimination, and the violence inflicted on us by patriarchy. We learn not to make waves. We learn to silence ourselves, smile, suppress it, turn it inward, and fear feeling it. But these reactions disconnect us from our authenticity and power and our wisdom, and create habits of turning against ourselves in blame and shame, and all too often lead to chronic anxiety and depression. Yet anger is a natural human emotion. And like all emotions, it's a vital teacher. It's telling us something really important. Namely, something happened to something we care about deeply that wasn't right. It wasn't how we wanted it to be, and we blame someone or something for it. This can range from trivial to crucial, and from our personal desires to core human values like love and kindness, equality, and world peace. We can be mad at ourselves for not being how we think we should be, or mad at someone else for what they did or didn't do. We can be mad at society, institutions, at whole groups of people, at nations, at God. But anger, like all emotions, arises when certain conditions come together. Buddhism teaches that all conditioned things are empty of independent existence. They do not exist separately on their own. Emotions are like fragile bubbles, wisps of fog. They're temporary, and they have no solid form. The only power anger has comes from the meaning we give it and the actions that follow. As an emotion, anger's existence is as valid as joy or equanimity. Yet very often when we're feeling mad, anger is just the top layer of our unpleasant emotional weather. Underneath it may be a swirl of other painful feelings, grief, fear, sadness, shame, longing, loneliness, dread, a whole hot mess of painful feelings that we'd rather keep a lid on. But as a teacher, anger points us clearly to our reality. Its energetic surge wakes us up to something not being right that really matters. I remember once feeling so mad that I literally saw red. I'd gotten some key information that made me feel instantly violated. And I was so shocked that everything suddenly had a reddish hue that it actually popped me out of my confusion and I knew exactly what I needed to do. That angry alert, that powerful reveal, points us directly to what we want, to what we value and care about deeply. We can understand anger as the deepest form of compassion and love for another, for ourself, for a life, for the body, and for all our ideals, all of which are vulnerable to being hurt. Anger's fire illuminates what we belong to, what we want to protect, and are willing to take risks for. It shows us that there's something we value that's deep and close that needs tending. Of course, the danger with anger is its destructiveness when it's not seen clearly and expressed wisely. Without mindful awareness, we easily get stuck in it, replaying the painful events over and over, building our case, and clinging tightly to our grievance. Our view narrows and polarizes around whoever or whatever we blame for the wrong, and our heart closes in response. When we're stuck like this, so attached to our desire and our view of the bad behavior, we quickly dehumanize the culprit or whoever we blame. And this makes it easy to react aggressively and inflict harm. We forget we're all human with the same basic needs and desires, hopes and fears, and we all act unskillfully out of our conditioning at times. When we're mad at ourselves, this habit to punish, to turn against, leads directly to the pain of guilt and shame and self-hatred. When we're mad at another, we often want revenge. We believe striking back will even the score. However, studies show retribution doesn't heal the pain. Instead, the mind stays caught in obsessing about the wrong, and our hearts remain shut in protection. Tragically, we can stay painfully stuck in a grievance for years or a whole lifetime. Historically and globally, we see how this is true for nations as well, as wars recycle over and over without true resolution. Yet it is the wise channeling of anger that does bring about change for the better. Think for a moment about all the brave, wise, loving people who've come before us that forged profound social change. Establishing women's right to vote, the civil rights movement, LGBTQ and marriage equality, the Me Too movement, the powerful women of Iran who organized the Women Life Freedom Movement, the collective outrage at losing the right to choose abortion, prompting 20 states to make abortion legal. All these courageous people, who because of their clear seeing of what was morally wrong, fought for what they dearly believed was right. Anger held clearly and wisely creates determination and resilience to act towards what is loving, beneficial, and freeing. So we want to know when we're feeling angry because it's vital information that something isn't happening that deeply matters to us. This is anger's benefit. Then we want to see if what we're attached to is wholesome and worthwhile. And we want to find skillful action. This is the key to finding our wisdom and power with anger. If we can't see clearly into this, understanding what it's really about, we'll feel victimized and powerless. Ultimately, we need to make a choice either to let this anger go because it's unwise and harmful, or find a way to channel it into effective engagement and action. So let's reflect now more inwardly and look at our own relationship to anger. How do you feel about yourself when you feel angry? How do you relate to it? And what messages did you get about anger growing up? It's helpful to reflect on our conditioning. In my case, my parents, good moral people, lived primarily in their intellect. The spectrum of their emotional palate was quite limited. So growing up, when someone asked us how I was, or asked me how I was, I followed my parents' modeling and answered, "I'm fine." But truth be told, under the "I'm fine" was unrecognized anxiety. Psychology courses in college made me begin to wonder about the fact that I was never aware of feeling angry. Thinking that probably wasn't normal or healthy, I'll never forget the session I had with myself alone in my apartment one day, where I stood in front of my bathroom mirror and tried to conjure up feelings of anger. I scrunched up my face and practiced shouting, "Damn! Shoot! Damn!" trying to feel this in my body, hoping to open the door for more access to these normal human feelings. And that was really the beginning of unlearning the habits of suppressing myself and gradually opening to not only anger, but a wider range of emotions. But what's true for you? What habits did you learn about relating to anger? Ruth King, mindfulness teacher and author of Healing Rage, Women Making Inner Peace Possible, suggests that as women, we learn three main styles for relating to anger. See if any of these ring true for you. One style is fight, or she calls it in the ring with rage. Here we dominate by leading with anger when we feel attacked or trapped or caught off guard. This helps us feel in control and keeps others at a distance. Or we're defiant, habitually in conflict with others, or inwardly with ourselves. A second style is flight, or, as she calls it, on the run from rage. Here we avoid conflict and anger by distraction, staying busy, and staying focused on externals. We're likely to give in with conflict, but then harbor resentment. Or we disguise anger with a lifelong pattern of being pleasing. This helps us deal with the terror we feel when others are upset with us. The third style she calls shrink, or hide and seek from rage. Here we feel overwhelmed with life, and so we accommodate to avoid conflict. We feel too small emotionally to fight, so we give up, but then often feel guilty and ashamed. All of these conditioned styles keep us imprisoned, confused, in pain, and cut off from our wisdom, intelligence, and power, and unable to learn really from the anger that we feel. So how can we work mindfully with anger so we can use its clarity and energy beneficially? I think the very first step is always the willingness to be honest and recognize when we're feeling angry, whether we're all worked up and ready to fight, or we're fleeing and on the run from it, or we're shrinking and hiding and pretending that we're fine. As soon as we spot it, we can softly note it. Yep, right now feeling frustrated and really mad. We observe what is reality. This is radical acceptance. It squares us up to what's authentic and true for us in this moment. Next, and this is what Pema Chodron advises, we intentionally create a pause or a gap or a space to interrupt that momentum of anger. We can do this by choosing to move our attention to the breath and feel the body breathing, or we can feel down into our feet and connect with the earth, or we can catch the vastness of the sky for a few moments, anything really to create a pause and interrupt the momentum. This pause is a key and powerful move because it's instantly stabilizing and it allows the inner room to access our basic goodness, the inner resources of our true nature that are always available to us, our natural intelligence, the warmth of our hearts, and the openness of our minds. This view that as human beings we all have access to wisdom to make prudent choices and take skillful actions is one of the things I so appreciate about Buddhist teachings. It's optimistic and engenders trust in ourselves and each other. When we're not hooked by our conditioned habits and beliefs, we all have that ability to for making decisions that can help. We all know if we lash out aggressively, we'll only make matters worse. But when we're caught up in the fury of anger, we block access to our wisdom. So creating a gap allows the needed inner space for our intelligence to shine through. This pause also gives us access to our heart, our natural warmth, our capacity to love. Within the tenderness of our open heart, empathy and compassion for ourselves and others naturally arises when we recognize suffering. All of the innate qualities of the heart, love, sympathetic joy, compassion, and equanimity, the divine abodes, or the four immeasurables as they're often called, are accessible to us in this pause. We can find them in this pause. As human beings, we all have a deep yearning for love, safety, peace, and contentment. This is part of our true nature, who we truly are. So it's natural to feel anger and pain and grief when we witness others being aggressive and destructive and not respecting the preciousness of life. Our ability to be kind, care deeply, to be affectionate and tender, to empathize, to forgive, to be courageous, are all natural qualities of our heart. Love is the healing power. Pausing and creating a gap also opens us to the natural skylight quality of our minds. Fundamentally, our consciousness is open, expansive, spacious, stable, flexible, and curious. It is non-judging and accepting. It is not biased. Spaciousness is the natural condition of the mind before we narrow down into a view of right or wrong, good or bad, before we see others as either friend or enemy. So by choosing to pause, at whatever point we realize we're angry, we interrupt the momentum of anger, and in that natural openness of our consciousness, we have the opportunity to respond with more clarity and wisdom. Then next, with sincere curiosity, really wanting to know, we ask, well, how am I actually experiencing this anger? This brings us into direct contact with our experience. We want to know the story the mind is spinning, and also the sensations we're feeling in the body. When we're caught up in anger, we often bypass our own painful feelings because we tend to narrow in on who or what's at fault, flinging fury at the cause. But we need to feel this emotion in order to heal and learn from it. Though we want to clearly recognize the harm and the story our mind's telling us about it, we know our minds tell a lot of stories that aren't totally accurate or true, right? Our view can be distorted. The teachings remind us not to believe everything we think. Plus, the energy of the compelling rant can easily hijack us, keeping us trapped in the painful story. So once we know the story, why we're mad, it's important to shift attention away from the story and move down into the body to connect with the sensations of this. We zero in on the how we are upset, the feelings of it. This takes courage and compassion because we're opening directly to the unpleasant, painful sensations. And to stay steady there, it's helpful to describe precisely what these sensations are like. By keeping our attention here, staying with the sensations, accepting them with compassion, spaciously cradling them as they are, we can connect more deeply with what we're really caring about, what this is really about. And this honest inquiry leads us to wise discernment. In the Buddhist teachings of the Four Noble Truths, that there is suffering, that there is a cause to our suffering, there's a remedy or a way to release our suffering, and a path to realizing peacefulness and freedom. The Second Noble Truth says the cause of suffering is clinging to or grasping onto something we want that isn't happening. So discovering what we're truly attached to helps us see how to shift our relationship to this anger and hurt. So we can ask ourselves, is what I'm attached to, is what I'm wanting, worthwhile and wholesome? Or is it trivial, more egoic, and unwholesome? What is it that really matters to me that I'm attached to? For example, is feeling irritated because I want the dishes to be put away just so? Or I want my young puppy to grow up and be a good dog right now? Is that really wise and worthwhile to be caught in that? With the clarity of our natural intelligence, we can assess whether what we're caring about and wanting is realistic, under our control, and worth getting bent out of shape about. If we see it's not wise or wholesome, out of love and compassion for ourselves, we can encourage ourselves to loosen our grip, open our heart, and let it go. On the other hand, we realize that what we're angry about is attached to a core value that we care deeply about, like loving kindness, respect for all life, or for equality, justice, peace, then we understand this anger is wholesome and useful. Out of love and compassion for ourselves, knowing that what we care about truly matters, this anger can lead to clarity about what actions we could take that will help stop harm from happening and bring about healing and love and freedom. But we don't want to stay caught in anger, even if it is wholesome, because that just eats us up and depletes us. Because it's so painful. It's essential that we bring love and compassion to ourselves when we're feeling angry. And key to finding a wise response is connecting with the natural warmth of our hearts. So compassion is essential. Compassion is a form of love. We all know it. It's a deep caring for the well-being of ourselves and others. It's the ability to open our hearts in sympathy to the pain we and others feel, along with a desire to do whatever we can to stop further harm. Compassion can be soft and comforting, expressing, "I'm so sorry for your pain," or "I'm so sorry for my pain. I'm sorry this is so painful right now." This allows our heart to open so we can hold the pain gently and spaciously, remembering that suffering is universal. Compassion is also about setting a boundary and saying no to harmful behavior. Sharon Salzberg received a teaching about this early in her study of Buddhism. You may well know this story. While traveling with a friend in a rickshaw through the city of Calcutta, a man tried to pull her out of the rickshaw and rape her. Her friend managed to pull her back in to safety and they escaped. But Sharon was very upset about this and wanting to know the correct Buddhist response to this attack. So she described this incident to her next teacher. He listened very carefully and then he said, "Well, my dear, with all the love in your heart, you should have taken out your umbrella and hit him over the head as hard as you could." This was direct instruction in compassion, fierce compassion. Do whatever you can to stop the harm from happening, but do it with love in your heart, not hatred. This would have been a compassionate act not only for Sharon, protecting herself from harm, but compassionate for the man too, stopping him from causing harm to another. But as Sharon's teacher instructed, we need to do this with love, not hatred. The Buddha taught that hatred only creates more hatred, and it is only love that heals. So to respond to a harmful act with fierce compassion, with love in our heart, requires understanding that the person causing harm is acting out of their pain and suffering. They're unable to see the other as human, just like them. They're unable to see reality clearly. When their actions arouse anger in us, then out of love, not hatred, we can empower ourselves to do what we can to stop the harm. Because compassion keeps our heart open in the midst of suffering, it creates other beneficial effects. Pema Chodron told of a remarkable study of a group of Tibetan monks and nuns who had been imprisoned for over 10 years by the Chinese when they took over Tibet. These monks and nuns endured terrible daily torture from their jailers. But amazingly, after their release, they showed no signs of PTSD. When the researchers asked what they were doing that made this possible, they said they were doing compassion practices, both for themselves and for their perpetrators. And the more intense the torture got, the more intense their compassion practices became. It seems by keeping their hearts compassionately open to their suffering, they were not psychologically damaged by the torture. In fact, research now shows that when we feel compassion, the pleasure centers in our brain light up, and the vagus nerve, which lowers heart rate and causes the autonomic nervous system to release soothing hormones, is activated. And all of this facilitates caregiving behaviors and fearlessness and courageous action. So when something happens that raises our ire or anger, someone treats us or someone we love badly, can we remember that this anger is our teacher? If we can pause, create that essential gap, and bring mindfulness to our experience, we have the possibility of finding skillful action. My wife and I had an experience some years ago that aroused anger and fierce compassion, and I want to offer it to you now for your contemplation. We were traveling home from visiting my parents on a beautiful summer Sunday and decided to stop at a state park on Lake Michigan to relax and sunbathe on the beach. The beach was really crowded with lots of families playing in the water and the sand. And the sunbathers were arranged in several rows parallel to the shore. After changing into our swimsuits in the bathhouse, we laid our towels among the other row, among a row of other sunbathers to catch the sun. Lying next to Pam, I kept my sunglasses on to protect my eyelids from burning. Relaxing and loving the feeling of the warm sun on my body, I was suddenly surprised to sense someone standing at the foot of my towel. As I opened my eyes under my sunglasses, I saw that a man was standing at the foot of my towel and taking a long, lingering look at my crotch area. He then moved to the foot of Pam's towel and took a long look at her privates. Oh, yuck, I thought, creepy man. I said nothing to Pam about it because I didn't want to disturb her relaxing time and I wanted to forget about it. When it was time to leave, we changed back into our clothes in the bathhouse. But as we headed toward the car, suddenly this same man appeared and started talking to us. I was instantly appalled and tried to get Pam to disentangle from him. His accent revealed that he was Hispanic. Not knowing about his offensive glare at our privates, Pam began trying to communicate with him in Spanish. They continued in this effort, speaking in Spanish, as we walked toward the car. Then suddenly, her demeanor changed, and she abruptly hopped into the car, saying, "Let's get out of here right now, fast." As I drew us out of the parking lot, I asked her what had happened that suddenly made her so upset. She said she'd been earnestly trying to understand what he was saying, but then finally realized he'd been talking about her privates. Yuck. So as we drove away, I told her about his lingering gaze at our crotches, and I sank into that old familiar feeling of being demeaned and sexually objectified by a man. A sickening, depressing, disgusting, victimized, powerless feeling that I felt in my entire torso. Pam looked like she felt the same. I thought, geez, like every other time, once again we have to just stomach this. I held this in my awareness for a few moments, feeling the familiar pain. I took a long, deep breath. And then I turned to her and asked if she wanted to do something about this. She said, yes. So I turned the car around and we headed back to the beach to find this man and call him on his behavior. Though we didn't talk about our plan, we both knew what we wanted to do. We marched parallel to each other along the beach, about 20 feet apart, scanning for him among the sunbathers and the families. I felt so enraged, so sick of being treated like this, that I wanted to punch him in the face with all my might. But I imagined this so vividly, I realized that this would really hurt, so I thankfully cast that idea aside. But I did know I wanted to connect with him and set him straight. So as we're marching along, scanning for him, suddenly, there he was down the beach a bit, sitting with a woman and a young girl. We took off running after him. He spotted us and took off running too, away from us. I could see the people around us, families and kids, looking surprised, and some of them abruptly getting up to move. You know, we were disturbing the beach scene. And as we ran past the woman and child he'd been with, I saw that she looked confused. So I stopped for a moment and told her he had sexually insulted us, and that was not okay. I wanted her to know. Running after him as fast as we could, he headed for the bathhouse. And as we turned the corner to follow, he ran into an inner corner of the building, and suddenly, we had him trapped. He looked scared. Pam's gaze was fierce. Trembling with energy and feeling empowered, I exclaimed to him, "You sexually insulted us. That is wrong. Do not do this to women. You sexually insulted us. Do not treat women this way. Don't ever do this again." Shrinking from us, he then said in perfect English, "I'm sorry. I'm so, so sorry. I won't." And with that, we turned and walked away. Driving off, I felt relief from all those times when I'd been insulted by leering, yucky men and did nothing. This was clearly setting a boundary, using my umbrella, first compassion, saying, "No, you can't treat us this way." But our behavior was so out of the norm, we were unsure if we'd done the right thing. My hope was this man would never forget this, and he'd change his behavior toward women. As we processed this, even though I knew my actions were driven by anger, not hatred, still the power of my outrage was unsettling. In these very difficult times, where extremism and aggression seems unleashed, countless innocent people are being hurt, our planet is trembling, and our deepest human values for love and safety, equality and peace are at stake. It is so essential to stay connected to our hearts and minds and bodies, to be aware of all we feel, to be authentic, and to remember that anger alerts us to our deepest caring. As Maya Angelou reminds us, quote, "You should be angry, but you must not be bitter. Bitterness is like cancer. It eats upon the host. It doesn't do anything to the object of its displeasure. So use that anger. You write it. You paint it. You dance it. You march it. You vote it. You do everything about it. You talk it. Never stop talking it." End quote. So when anger is here, let's bow to it. Let's honor it. Let's remember it's pointing to what we love and care for deeply. Then let's create that pause, that vital gap, and investigate it mindfully to see if this is wholesome and beneficial or not. Let's discern what we have control over right now. And out of that clear seeing, discover what action would be most helpful. And when we realize this anger is not beneficial, it's rooted in conditioned beliefs that aren't true and habits that don't serve us, then out of love and compassion for ourselves, let's encourage ourselves gently to loosen our grip and let go. Let's not condemn ourselves for feeling this. Instead, let's stay on our own side, offering acceptance and love and compassion to ourselves because we're in pain. And when we're clear that this anger is worthwhile, let's empower ourselves to act. As women, individually, we all have agency. Every single one of us is powerful. A vital part of our work is to do what we can to help bring about the social, political, economic, and spiritual conditions that will make feeling anger more the exception than the norm. Because we're interconnected, what we feel and what we do ripples out. It matters and it makes a difference. Collectively, we have enormous power. It's vital that we take action. This is the antidote for feeling powerless. Harnessing the energy of anger can be the quickest path to love. Valerie Kaur, author of the important book, See No Stranger, says, quote, "In this time of violent extremists, we must be extreme in our love. Revolutionary love is the call of our time. We can channel our rage into action and notice what it feels like to stand on the side of humanity." End quote. We can volunteer, call our elected officials, donate money to causes we value, help with the next election, support a food bank, do whatever we can that feels helpful and meaningful to channel our anger constructively. It's time to be powerful with love in our hearts. It's time to honor and understand the anger we feel instead of fearing it, suppressing it, or staying caught in it. Let's turn our wise, wholesome anger into creating change for the better. This is truly a time to be brave, spiritual warriors. Our wise women voices must be heard. As poet and author Adrienne Rich says, when women wake up and tell the truth, the world will change. So let's wake up, encourage ourselves to speak our truth, and empower ourselves to do whatever we can to help ourselves and our so precious world. Let's just take a few minutes to sit, if we can.